You are listening to The Airing Cupboard, the podcast where the extraordinary stories of ordinary people get an airing. Phew, that's a mouthful. Hello and welcome back into The Airing Cupboard. It has been a while since my last story, and during that time I feel that we have just all pushed slightly further into our dark winters. Here in the UK, the third lockdown is bearing its weight on all, and I can really feel that many of us are in dire need of light, sunshine, good news, in need of joy. Of course, all of that will come back, because it is in the nature of things. But in the meantime, I thought I would voice a little story to soothe our depressed hearts, to give us a little bubble of escapism. As I announced it on social media, I promised you it would only be about sugar and spice and all things nice. And so it is. But there is a twist. This story is series 3 on its own, a bonus episode. This story will be different from all the 35 others voiced on this platform. Indeed, this one is fiction. It isn't based on anyone's reality. It is the pure fruit of my wild imagination. So, this one is from me to you with love. This is the story of Clara. I've decided to call her Clara because her name speaks of light and brilliance and transparency, and I thought it would be a good starting point for this tale. So Clara was born on a Thursday morning in a small maternity unit in Oxfordshire in 1970. Thursday child has far to go, had said the midwife, as the newborn slipped into the world. But really, she had never gone anywhere. Her mother was barely just 17 on the day of her birth, and in the waiting room there was no father waiting, just a grandmother. And as the birth had been difficult and long, as the young mother recoiled into a ball on her hospital bed, the first arms that Clara had known were the ones of a grandmother. The first touch on that virgin newborn skin had been that of her grandmother's. Her lips on her forehead, her nose in the tender little folds of her neck. Clara grew up as an only child to a single mum. Her mother had never married, never even managed a long-term relationship, and it wasn't fault of trying. Clara remembers well those countless occasions when she would wake up late evening and listen to her mother's laugh, intertwined with another, deeper, rarely the same, in the sounds of wine glasses and music. Or other times, when in the small hours of the morning she would hear a man's voice coming from her mother's room. When she was very little, woken up by a frightening dream, she would get up, trailing a cuddly blanket behind her, hoping to climb into her mum's bed as she often did, but on those occasions, the door was shut, and the child would stand there, listening to the sound of a snow she didn't know or recognize. Never a door had seemed as big and impassable. As she grew up, she learned to recognize the signs and make herself small. She would arrive back from school, and in the kitchen on the table, two unfinished beers would have been abandoned, or a coat would be left on the back of a chair, or an unknown set of keys on the counter. And on such days, she would just walk the few hundred yards that separated her house from her grandmother's. Clara would push the back door open and be immediately welcomed by the smell of something cooking. Carrots braising in butter with a sprinkle of thyme, or red cabbage stewing with Bramley apples. Or if lucky, cake or scones, enveloping her in an olfactive shawl of protection and comfort. She would walk into the sitting room and a granny would look up from her book or whatever she was doing and would smile, never asking questions as to why she was there. But of course, a mother knows. "Sparrow, darling," she would say, as Clara would kiss her, and she would cup the cheek of the child with her hand. "Sparrow." She had always called her that way, maybe because of her slight build or because of her love for birds. She had never asked. She had never wondered. We never wonder about those things when we are children. But as she grew older, Clara often thought about it, and secretly she wished she had been nicknamed after a grander bird, a more colourful one. The sparrow is common and brown. On those regular visits, Clara and her grandmother had their little ritual. The first thing was to turn the big chair around, so to face the garden. She had a small garden, long and narrow, in which she spent a lot of time during the fair and sunny days. But in the winter, there was only one thing she did in a garden, and that was to feed the birds. She had three tables, only a few feet away from the windows of the kitchen and the sitting room. Fats and seeds would attract birds from all the corners of the neighborhood, and the child would sit herself comfortably in the depth of the large velvet chair, her feet still a few inches off the floor, and she would watch the feeding ballet of the feathery type. So many different birds, coming in all shapes and colors. They seemed to be a pecking order, dictated by the size and weight of the bird. The blue tit would let its place to the robin, who would be chased off by the finch, and then sometimes the jay would come. And the child watched with delight. And then a grandmother would pop the bird book on Clara's laps, the complete book of British birds. Clara had always known this book. It was attached to her granny somehow. It lived on the little wooden side table. It was a large book, and her granny had made all sorts of additions to it, attaching handwritten sheets with sellotape, describing the personality of the bird, or different observations, sometimes quoting other people's observations. And Clara would flick the page softly, identifying the birds in front of her on the feeding tables. And then her granny would bring her a piece of cake and pop it on the top of the open book. And she would pull a chair right next to Clara's. And together they would watch, trying to be as still as possible as to not disturb the feeding dance in front of the eyes. And apart from digging a few cake crumbs out of the wool of her jumper, the child would give it a full attention. And there, sitting next to her grandmother, her feet dangling off the large velvet chair, all was well. And she didn't think anymore about the two unfinished beer bottles left in the kitchen at home, or the unknown set of keys on the counter. Years passed and Clara's legs grew, and soon her feet touched the floor. And as she grew older, her love for birdwatching became more central to her life. Some weekends, she and her grandmother would drive to a nice little bird hide that wasn't very well known in the Oxfordshire countryside. They never saw anyone there, and they would sit side by side in silence, observing through the slit in the wood the birds coming and going. She was gifted at school, especially in math and physics. She seemed to have a natural feel and ability for numbers and figures. And so when at 16 she had to make the move from secondary school to college, she was offered a place at the local grammar school. And it is then, on the very first day of term, that she met Matt. He must have had his growth spurts before the other boys of his age, as he seemed to be towering over them in the back of the classroom. All those boys seemed to know each other quite well already, They were chatting and laughing, and they didn't stop as Clara walked into the classroom. But Matt turned slightly around and looked at her. He was still involved in the conversation with his friends, but his brown eyes stayed on her. And she saw that dimple in his right cheek as he smiled at one of his mate's jokes. Still, his eyes on her. And her heart started beating just a little faster. It is funny in life. We do not always measure at the time the significance of a moment, a meeting. We have no idea yet about the imprint that it will have on our souls, changing our emotional landscape, never to be the same again. And so it was for Clara. That moment of shift, that imprint that was going to make a search for the soft intensity of the brown eyes and the cheekiness of the dimpled smile in all the faces of the men she would meet from then on. That afternoon, as she walked back home, she heard the blackbird throwing its songs across the quiet streets, perched somewhere on a roof. She stopped a moment, looked up, searching for the bird. And she stood there, head back. She closed her eyes and listened. Never bird's song had been as pure, as sweet, as promising as this one. Clara had very little self-confidence. She was awkward in a conversation. She never really knew what to say. She would watch the other girls, commanding attention with their laugh or just a flick of their hair. And she didn't like her looks. At almost 18, she was still sparrow-like. She would stand naked in front of the mirror, searching her face and her body for her femininity, her beauty. But she saw nothing. There was nothing. But during the 2 years at college, Matt was often chatting to her, seeking her company. They even sometimes worked together in the library. She had seen the golden specks in the brown of his eyes. She had wanted to put the tip of her finger into the tip of his dimple just to feel what it was like. But of course, she knew he wouldn't be interested by her that way. She wouldn't have ever dreamt of it. And so, when he had led her away from the group on the warm June night of the formal ball, when his hand reached for hers as they crossed the lawn in the semi-darkness towards the big trees, as her heart raced so fast she could feel its beat in her ears, she still didn't believe he had chosen her. What beauty could he see in her? And when a little later she was lying back on a soft carpet of moss, her hair spread around her face, as if taking roots in the good soft earth, when she saw the silhouette of his face approaching hers, when she received her first ever kiss, then, only then, did she believe it. And it was like a flower, opening in the deep and the tender of her belly, creating a space. And within it, all the beauties of the world came flooding in. And the evening breeze shook a little the leaves above them and brought in its trail the call of the cuckoo and its promise of warmth, sun, and light. They saw a lot of each other over the next 2 months. Matt got to meet Clara's grandmother. He got to sit on the chair with the complete book of British birds on his laps. And although there were no birds to watch at that time of the year, he certainly got his introduction to the idea of birdwatching. They spent hours lying on a blanket under the old pear tree at the bottom of the long garden, basking in the comfort of being together, flecks of light playing on their faces. They went for walks in the long grass, covered with dew, early mornings, leaving a trail as they went. She even took him to the bird hides that she had visited many times with her grandmother. She had never felt as alive and vibrant and as beautiful. And all too fast the summer passed, and with its ending, Matt's departure to study in Dublin, while Clara was enrolled in a London university, and so they promised each other to write. But as weeks stretched into months, Clara found it more and more difficult to communicate with him. She felt awkward. She didn't really know what to say or how to say it, like the girl she used to be. Her writing was trivial and empty. And as time and distance stretched everything, letters were sent and arrived more seldomly. And Clara cannot remember who sent the very last one. But they stopped being exchanged altogether. Once or twice over the next 2 years, Matt tried to contact her. Clara never made any effort to get back to him. Why? She isn't sure. But it might have had something to do with the times, looking at the sparrow-like figure staring back at her in the mirror, whispering from the depth of her heart that really there were no great beauties to be found in there. And life went on. Clara started working in the city in London for an investment bank. And one day, as she was standing on the platform in the underground, absorbed in her book, something made her look up. And there, barely 10 meters away from her, separated by the rails, on the opposite platform, just in front of her, Matt was standing and looking straight at her, his mouth opening as their eyes met. And in that small distance that separated them hung a world of possibilities. And time stood utterly still. Why did Clara climb on that train when it pulled in? Again, she cannot explain it, but she knows she would have found it terrifying to find out that she was the only one left standing on the platform when both trains had departed. And that was the very last time she ever saw him. Years passed. Clara became very successful at her job, making a good living. Nice circle of friends and parties at weekends, and she had different relationships, but they never really lasted. She never really fell in love. They all had something in common. They were vacuous, and the men involved often had brown eyes or dimpled cheeks. Her grandmother had moved into a home. She had been suffering with dementia for a few years now, and she really was getting worse. And so often at the weekends, Clara would drive down and spend an hour or two with her. The best times were when Clara arrived early mornings for the first visits in March or April. She would sit her granny in a wheelchair, wrap a heavy blanket over her, tucking it nicely under her chin, and wheel her out into the grounds of the residential home. They would find a bench under the leafless plane trees, and they would sit together, side by side, in the morning chorus of the robins, song thrushes, blackbirds, tits, united in their wonder. And the granny would put a long spindly hand over Clara's and tap it gently. "Sparrow," she would say. "Sparrow," as she tapped, and it felt good. And it was on a March Sunday morning after one of those visits that Clara woke up very, very early. She had left her bedroom window opened, and she could hear the blackbird calling with its perfect song. And she remembered that day, all those years ago. She remembered the feeling of beauty she had felt. And that feeling, inhibited her all of a sudden and completely. And she had a visceral need to be reconnected with herself, with nature, to stand in silence, to observe, to fill her eyes with the beauty of the world. The bird hide. She wanted to be there, now. So she threw some clothes on, picked up her keys, and jumped in a car. By the time she got there, the sun had almost risen. She walked the mile or so that was separating the car park to the hide and arrived at the hut just as the first ray of sunshine were caressing nature around her. And she quietly walked in. And there she was annoyed. Indeed, there was already someone sitting in the space. What was the chance of that? She had never seen anyone in here before. On the bench, peering through one of the slits in the wood, a man was intently observing, his head buried in the hood of his sweatshirt. And feeling her presence, he turned back. And in the semi-obscurity of the hide, now framed by tortoiseshell glasses, she recognized immediately the brown eyes, with the specks of gold and the dimple that appeared in the right cheek as he started smiling in amazement. So now, dear erring cupboarders, I am not going to let you hanging. As this is a different story, I am going to give you an epilogue. We must fast forward 2 years. Sadly, Clara's grandmother had just passed away. Clara had said she wanted nothing from the little possessions that she had left behind, apart from one thing, the book. The Complete Guide of British Birds. Her mother had agreed and the book was going to be sent to her via courier as Clara had moved away deep into the Devon countryside. It is a warm afternoon. The house is quiet. Downstairs, just a fly is buzzing, making its way from the tap to the teat of a half-drunk baby bottle. A newspaper has been abandoned on the low table, and on top of it, some tortoiseshell glasses. The dog is sleeping in a pool of sunshine on the flagstones in front of the open kitchen door. There is a knock on the door. Clara runs down the stairs, barefooted. It's the courier. She signs for the parcel, thanking, and closes the door. Clutching the book against the chest, she climbs back up into her bedroom and she stands at the open window. From here, she has a perfect view of them. The apple trees around them are shedding their petals in the breeze. She watches them. Matt is asleep in the deck chair, abandoned, legs relaxed and open. And on his chest, their little baby is fast asleep also, his fat little cheek squashed on his father's collarbone. And Clara steps back a little and opens the parcel. The book. It is overspilling with those extra handwritten sheets, sellotaped to the pages. And it is a little battered. She caresses the cover with her hand. She opens it and she buries her nose in it. And she flicks through the pages, looking at the pictures and her grandmother's additions. And as she turns the page, she recognizes the bird better than any others. And she smiles. The sparrow. And attached to the page is her grandmother's handwriting. Sparrow. This time, she had copied a text from someone else. Drew Lanham. And as Clara reads, she smiles, she understands, and all is well and at its place. And it reads, The sparrow appears brown from far away and hard to identify. But if you just take the time to get to know that sparrow, then you see all of these hues. You see 5, 6, 7 shades of brown on this bird. And you see little splashes of ochre or yellow or grey and black and white. And all of those things on this bird that at first glance just appeared to be brown. And so in taking that time to delve into not just what the bird is, but who that bird is, and to understand that to get from some egg in a nest to where it is, to grace you with its presence, it has taken for this bird trials and tribulations and escaping all of these hazards. And so I try to think about people as much as I can in that way, that each of us has had these struggles from the nest to where we have flown now and the journeys that we are on. Et voilà, I will leave you to ponder on Jules Lanham's words. It was taken out of a transcript of a podcast called On Being with Krista Tippett. You will find it at onbeing.org. Or if you want to listen to it, you can search for it on your favorite podcast app. And I thank Patty from Jamie's Story, who sent me the link early morning, 2 or 3 days ago, completely unaware that I was sitting in the kitchen writing this very story. What do you call it? A synchronicity. It just keeps on happening. I hope you have liked my little story, that you are not too cross with me for having invented it. But if you're not too angry, please rate and review The Erin Cupboard on iTunes and share it with your friends. As I said, I will be back, probably in the spring, because as you can see, it's quite difficult for me to keep away from my cupboard. So I wish you all a very good few weeks. Don't despair, things are definitely on the up. A little bird has told me. Well, couldn't resist that one, little bird song, you see. Anyway, and until we meet again in the Erin Cupboard, goodbye.